Welcome back. You're with Public Address Radio on Radio Live. This week saw the staging of the 2007 charity auction for the Rokitori Music Therapy Centre. This annual glamour event raises money for the centre's work in using music to reach and improve the lives of disabled children. The trust behind the centre was the brainchild of singer Hinewehi Mohi, who took her daughter, Hine Rokitori, to the Northolf Robbins Music Therapy Centre in London in 1999. This year's event is a bit special. The guest of honour is Dr. Clive Robbins, who, with composer Paul Northolf, essentially created the practice of music therapy. He's with us now. Clive, your name is virtually synonymous with music therapy, but how, when and why did it begin?
Okay, I was a special educator at a private home in England named Sunfield. And I was working with handicapped children of different kinds, autistic children, heavily brain damaged children, multiply handicapped. And I felt desperate to find a way of reaching the individuality that was kind of trapped in the handicapping condition. And I wanted to know how I can get through the barriers. And so I was searching to do that when the home where I was working has a visit from an American professor of music named Paul Northolf. And he was a very alive, active, communicative person. And he wrote music that was colorful, tuneful, tunes to remember, communicative, warm, enjoyable. And in America, he would become known as a neo-romantic composer. And in the 50s and 60s, that was a death sentence for a composer.
Right, because it was all very austere then, wasn't it?
It was austere, atonal music, serial music. The idea that music can be an expressive play of tones and rhythms and arouse emotion and express the content of our lives was really a little bit passé in those days. It got revived since then, thank goodness. And he had come because he was getting interested in the idea that music could be a therapy, particularly because he was a composer and a brilliant pianist, of improvising music for therapy. Well, I heard his music. He gave a little concert of his music for the staff. It was marvelous. I was swept away. It was alive. It was personal. It was colorful. It expressed, he sang a number of songs to poems of E.E. Cummings and other poets. And the way he played and sang really dramatized the poem and its content. And it was so vivid and alive. So I was thrilled with that. I never forgot his music. He went on and had other experiences of the effect of music with children. And he gave up his professorship, a tenured position in the States, at the age of 49 to explore what he could do in music therapy.
Because that's an enormous sacrifice, giving up tenure at that age.
Yep. But he was an adventurous man. He believed in living life. And that's what you have to do in music therapy, because you're living with the lives of the children, reaching into their lives with music. So he came back to this children's home because he knew the director. And he'd met me, and although we hadn't ever worked together, he'd seen me working with children. I'd heard him playing his songs. And so we got on very well together from the start. We began to work together. We shared the same values, tastes, pace, ideals, sympathies, and it was a great adventure. And we began to record the work, to study it more closely, and we found that the children were teaching us. No one had ever gone before into this world of children's sensibilities to music, had gone into it methodically or carefully. But we were really going and listening to the recordings, finding out what it was that was reaching the children and what their developmental processes could be in music. And this was musical improvisation. This was looking at a child, feeling his presence, and Nordoff's fingers would find those tones that created the music he wanted to sound to that child. Or he'd come out with a song The child would beat a drum or play the piano beside him, or just walk around to start with, or sing, or cry. And he'd put his music to whatever was going on, and that would bring back another response, and we'd build on these responses. So we began to discover what you can call processes of music therapy.
Because it's intuitively appealing, the idea that, as you've put it, that there's an innate musicality in all of us. Was the task then to put some science behind it?
Was to bring, yes, you could say science. You'd have to broaden the concept of science a bit and take science into intuition, which it's a little bit wary of. But it's certainly, creativity is an intuitive capacity of the human being. And what you're bringing out with these children is you want to try to bring changes into the personality is really highly intuitive and musically inspirational. A tune comes out of where, and it's perfectly right for the child. It's that kind of practice.
So who does music therapy help, and how does it work? How, you know, what happens?
Okay, it depends really on the disability. With an autistic child, for example, it'll be a question of developing some kind of intercommunication and interaction. This may be, the child may participate and then withdraw from the participation, but you go back there, and then it goes further. And then the child says, wait a minute, and starts to challenge you in some ways. This would say, you know, if you really want to do this, you've got to take me seriously. And really, children become your teachers, they do. Even young 2-3-year-olds can teach you. So you really find a way of contact. You build communication and out of that relationship. And then within the child, you can get a process of really self-actualization. The child starts to unfold its abilities, its unrealized capacities. It's appreciation of life. A child learns to look at life differently.
Did you get the feeling with the autistic children that they were actually perceiving the music in a completely different way to what you were?
I would have to say I haven't had that idea. I know they'll perceive it either because it might be familiar and it's something they can rock to or sing to or hum to. And they get their favorites and their attachments. And sometimes the actual aim of a therapist is to change that, is to extend it in ways and put and bring it to life. For example, we worked with a child in Australia who had really basically memorized the content of a record, and it was Italian children's songs, very playful and nice and bouncy. But he had heard this 7 times a day for several years, and we worked out he'd heard this record between 10 and 15,000 times. And the therapist I worked with, my wife then, it was after Nordoff's days, improvised on these songs. And this world of music that had become frozen for him, like walking through a frozen landscape. Everything is always the same. And then, but she began it, she played it in different keys, different tempos, different accompaniments, singing with it non-verbally, and then mixing 2 or 3 together. And it intrigued him. It brought it to life. And he just absolutely loved it.
It's you make it sound like quite an empathic discipline. You know, that there's got to be some sort of empathy.
Oh, it's got to be empathic. That's where the intuition comes in. It's like a composer has an idea in mind for a character, perhaps Madame Butterfly in an opera like Puccini. And he thinks of it, or you can think of Cats or any of the popular Broadway pieces. The composer has an intuition of what music is right for that character. It's a bit similar with what we're doing. What music is right to reach this child will hold his attention, to lead it forward and make him wait a little bit and then bring in a change and bring in surprises and pleasures.
In New Zealand, music therapy is very much associated with the music industry through the Rokotori Trust.
That's right.
Is that the case elsewhere in the world?
It has been in the past, in England particularly. The Nordoff Robbins Centre in London was really built on the magnificent donations of the British music industry. and that dates back to 76. And the first people to really help support us were the Who. And then all the other groups came on, Genesis, people like Elton John, Paul McCartney. They became really marvelous colleagues, partners in this work. And they identified with the goodness of it, the reality of it, the musicality of it.
I presume, you know, you want this to be taken up in even more countries than it is, and to keep going in the decades to come. Who's going to carry that work forward?
Well, we have training courses. I mean, music therapy is really caught on in the States, and it's catching on worldwide. There is a World Congress, a World Federation of Music Therapists, and every leading industrial country, and countries not so industrial, have music therapy societies. In America, for example, there are now over 70 colleges with music therapy courses, most of them undergraduate, about 30 of them graduate, and even some going to a doctoral level with music therapy.
Dr. Clive Robbins there, and you can find out more about the Rokitori Centre's work at rmtc.org.nz. After the break, energy.